Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, February 9th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now, absolutely free, at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
I'm Jason Owl.
And this is the show that kicks around the tech news of the day and tries to make some sense of it, even when it doesn't make any sense.
Well, but that's why we kick it around.
That's why we kick
no,
it until
it doesn't
make any sense.
Make some damn sense. Or we'll stop. We won't stop kicking you. Actually, the first story makes a lot of sense. HP had their WebOS event, their highly anticipated WebOS event today, and announced two phones and a tablet. I thought it was going to be the other way around.
You thought it was going to be two tablets and a phone?
I did.
Well, why?
Because all of the rumors said there was going to be a 10-inch tablet and there was going to be a 7-inch tablet.
You can think of it this way as there's a 10-inch tablet and a 3-inch tablet that can make phone calls. If that makes you feel better.
Right. Okay, maybe we should explain what these products are.
Oh, probably.
More accurately, there's no tablet until later this summer.
Let's get the techie details.
All right. So the HP TouchPad is the tablet. So it's just under 10 inches, right? It's got a 1.3 megapixel webcam, so it's, you know, it's kind of for conferencing stuff. It's not going to take beautiful pictures. You have 16 or 32 gigabyte storage options. It's got some sort of iPad competition pluses, like on the touchpad, it includes numbers and letters on the same screen, for example. So lots of
you mean on the key
on
the keyboard, the on-screen
keyboard?
Yeah,
you know, one of those things that. It's never been a huge problem for me, but a lot of iOS users.
It's only when I put in passwords where you've got numbers and letters interspersed, and you've got to keep switching back and forth between that. Kind of makes it clunky.
Yeah,
like with Android, where you can install your own keyboard. Mm-hmm. You know, there's plenty to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's using a plug-in keyboard, this is kind of null and void.
Nice.
But it's an option. They made a big deal about the audio system within WebOS on the tablet. Beats Audio by Dr. Dre. We've been hearing HP has been pushing this for a long time, and they were a little bit vague about how exactly they have incorporated the best audio in the business into their tablet, but they claim to have. Qualcomm CEO who got up on stage, Paul Jacobs, says the newest dual-core 1.2 gigahertz Snapdragon processor enables all-day battery life.
Just like the iPad.
But he didn't say how many hours all day means.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a regular eight-hour workday?
An executive workday. So like his
4 hours.
So 4 hours,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because my day, I consider a day any time that I'm not sleeping.
Usually when they say all-day battery life, they mean that you won't have to plug it in during the day to recharge it.
Right.
Until you want it to plug it in until you get home.
I mean, if it can rival iPad, then I consider it impressive.
Yeah. iPad has like 3-day battery life.
Yeah, it's great. So a little bit less than that. Big focus on multitasking. Product manager Sachin Kansal said, in WebOS, multitasking was not an afterthought. It was a key feature we developed from the very beginning, which obviously is like a... And guess who didn't do that from the very beginning?
Android and
Apple.
And iOS, right. Both. Had to bring in multitasking later. And neither one of them have true multitasking, which the BlackBerry Playbook does.
Right. I've played with the WebOS multitasking. It's some of the most beautiful I've seen.
Yeah, so they showed off how notifications work within multitasking. It looked a lot like OS X, actually, to me. You know, it's just sort of a little pull-down menu in the upper right-hand corner. It looks really nice. What's also cool is that they're, as far as accessories goes, one of their accessories is a case that's actually a stand and a keyboard. So it's a case when it's wrapped around the tablet, and then it actually opens up to be a stand plus keyboard. That's pretty cool.
And they also have the Touchstone stand, which wirelessly charges the tablet.
And that applies to the Veer and the Pre-3, which were the two phones that they unveiled today as well. What's weird about the touchpad, with the part that I was like, everything about this seems really cool, seems really promising, is that the Wi-Fi version will be available this summer, which is well after the expected iPad 2 launch.
Correct.
And then the 3D version to follow.
3G version.
3G. Yeah. I said that earlier. Yeah. You were right. I don't know. It's like 3D in the brain. There's too much 3D in my life. 3G version to follow at some point. So, I mean, that's not too different from the iPad, but I just feel like iPad 2 comes out. Is it just going to crush the buzz?
All iPad 2 has to do is have a camera.
Right.
And then everyone, whether that's right or not, everyone will start to look at that and go, well, I don't see what the big deal is.
So what do you guys
think? They'll have several months of people buying iPad 2s so that when the touchpad is available, they're like, well, I already have a tablet. Hmm. So there's that. Sorry, Darren.
No worries. What do you guys think about as far as like the target market for this? Because now we've got, BlackBerry tablets, we have iPhone tablets, we have iOS tablets, and we have Android tablets. Where does this fit in?
Bottom rung.
You really think so? Well, what do you think it's targeted
at? The reason for that is, and we were talking about this on This Week in Google, there is not a compelling reason to get what is otherwise a very fine product. You know, it's got a nice Snapdragon processor. It's very pretty. We don't know what the price point is on it yet. That could be the thing that makes it stand out. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, there's nothing that grabs you and goes, this is different. This is something that's really above and beyond. Maybe when we get a hold of that multitasking and I can actually play with it ourselves, we'll start to rave about that, and that could become the differentiator. But right now, just from where I sit.
So even if it does have just superior multitasking abilities, you don't think that that's compelling enough for somebody to switch from something like Android?
It could be. Just the fact that it's there right now isn't enough for me. I want to see it in action and see what I can do with it. Plus, the app ecosystem is much better developed on Android and iOS.
Yeah.
And
for general consumers, just having a really good multitasking ability isn't going to be enough to make them go, oh.
Well, yes, on the surface of it, that's true. But if it got into the marketplace and people started to show you, oh, you have that problem with the iPad where you can't really switch, easily from Google Docs to your email. Yeah, I don't have that problem because I got these little cards and it's almost like using a PC.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that would be the case with WebOS, but that's kind of what I imagine could be a differentiating factor.
As far as the phones, the HP Vera is a tiny, teeny little 2.6-inch touch display. They say it's the size of a credit card. It is thicker than one, but it's very, very small. Too small, really.
It's the replacement for the Palm Pixie.
Yeah, I guess so. It's 5 megapixel cam, 8 gigabytes of storage, mobile hotspot capability, available early spring. So if you're looking for a phone that will fit into your skinny jeans, the Vera might be your best option. And the Pre 3, it's a portrait slider, large QWERTY keyboard, 3.6 size screen, plays HD video. There's an 8 gigabyte or a 16 gigabyte model also available in the summer at some point. So I don't know if that's June 1st or August 30th.
I thought one of the neatest features was when they demoed taking the tablet and then also the Pre-3 phone, put them together, and then kind of like bumped a web page from one to another, which is really neat.
I thought that was neat, but I was racking my brain to try to think of when I would want to do that realistically in my day.
I just think it's fun on a security standpoint because I just want to break it.
Okay. That's something I'd like to hack
at. At least you're honest. Yeah.
I see that kind of integration with your phone being a purchase point influencer. Like, oh, that's kind of nifty.
Especially
but like you say, I bet
you
don't end up using it all that often.
Well, or maybe, I guess, if you've got a Pre 3 and I've got a touchpad and I go, oh my gosh, look at this site, and I'm able to just give it to you without having you to, type in a URL or copy a URL and IM it to you or something like that.
Right. When I saw it, I was like, hey, that's a really neat feature. If every device had that,
right.
And it's one of those like, when Sony has the things where like all of the Sony things play nice, where it's like, okay, great. What am I going to do? Like, replace all of my devices with a Sony one? No.
And Marmot points out, at least they didn't call it squirting.
Yes. There are no squircles either.
Thank you for that, Microsoft.
Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Did we mention the Pre-3 specs?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pre-3, so it looks cool.
We're one thing you may have noticed here, it's the HP Vera. It's the HP touchpad. It's even the HP Pre 3. No Palm branding.
No, why would there be Palm branding? This is HP's game now.
Well, yeah, but a lot of times when you buy a brand, especially a brand that has as much awareness as Palm, you want to trade on that. And you want to, there's a lot of people who have positive feelings about Palm, even though Palm hasn't been very good these past few years, they might say, oh, well, I want to get the Palm. I want to get the, you know, whatever the new Palm is. And they're saying, you know what? They ain't worth anything to us.
Well, the guy in the store is going to tell you, oh, this is the new Palm. It's not like, you know, if you're a fan of the Palm, you know where the brand has gone. Much like, and this happened a decade ago with HP, in fact, where the iPac, which by Compaq had a, you know, a great following. And when they took over Compaq, it was no longer the, you know, Compaq iPac. It was the HP iPac. They completely got rid of.
Although they did call Compaq computers HP Compaqs.
For a little while.
For a little while. Transition period. So.
It was also G4Tech TV for a little while.
And for a much longer time in Canada.
You know, I think that a lot of this has to do with the fact that WebOS, in HP's grand vision, is not all about Palm anymore. I mean, they want WebOS to be running on printers and desktops and laptops. And I mean, this is like a scalable
OS. They mentioned that WebOS PC is coming later this year.
I think this is the most interesting aspect of all of this, because all of these little toys, you know, the Veer, the Palm Pre 3, the HP Pre 3. See, I want to do it. And the tablet are, okay, great. Those are toys that will be obsolete in a couple of years. But by putting the WebOS experience on a laptop, on a desktop, on a personal computer, it kind of changes things where, like, you think about what it is a computer. I mean, Google's already doing that with things like the CR48 demo that we've seen with Chrome OS. I think we're starting to see more and more of this. In fact, we started to see really the beginnings of people wanting this years ago when people like Asus were putting into their BIOS these, like, quick boot things where you press this thing and it would, like, boot into the BIOS that had a full-featured web browser and Wi-Fi and things like that based on things like tiny Linux kernels. So it's really interesting to think about the computer of the future having, and I don't know if we're going to transition with, like, dual boot into, you know, dual boot, you know, web OS or Android or maybe.
Well, yeah, Jimmy in the chat room is pointing out Business Insider reports that web OS will run on top of Windows.
Oh,
in one of those hybrid situations. It's not going to replace
Windows. It's got to be one of those quick boots, you know, because if they can do it, you know, that fast on a tablet, why not quick boot into it on a laptop?
Hmm.
A spokesperson after the event explained WebOS would probably ship as a customized user interface.
Not as interested anymore.
Not
me either.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, they're getting out from under Microsoft's thumb.
Yeah.
WebOS, let's see how you do.
Microsoft,
But it's not as it seems.
Well, what is also still not what it seems, or at least we don't know anything for real, is the iPad 2, but the Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
Has one of the best track records of being right about these things, and they are finally reporting that the iPad 2 is coming soon and is actually in production right now.
They know people familiar with the matter. They were careful to say so several times.
I never know anyone familiar with the matter.
I think we probably
do.
They're just not talking to us. They're talking to the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, more than ever, it sounds like the iPad is going to be slimmer and lighter, be faster, have a front-facing camera, more memory. And the display isn't going to be, you know, if it changes at all, it's not going to be a significant upgrade. I still say the display is not something that bothers me on the iPad. So that's not something that is a disappointment to me. I think it's just because there were rumors that the display was you know, Retina display on the iPad 2. Wow. So anything less than that sounds all of a sudden not so great. But
yeah, I don't think that's a killer. It was more of the raised expectations getting disappointed. But
exactly.
You don't see a lot of Retina displays in the other tablets being shipped to the marketplace these days either. So
right.
That's not a differentiating factor. I wonder when we'll get an announcement and who will make it. I'm going to bet by the end of February they will have scheduled their announcement, and it might take place first week of March, last week of February.
And who's going to make the announcement?
Phil Schiller will make the announcement.
Good call.
We'll see.
$2?
Yeah, I'm down.
I don't have $2.
You don't have $2 to rub together.
Actually, a toonie might be worth more than
$2. That'd be more funny if it wasn't true.
Canadian. All right. A Sony marketing account, which is actually Kevin Butler, a fictional corporate VP that is played by Jerry Lambert in the PS3 advertising campaigns, was tricked into republishing the PS3 master key, which is used to jailbreak Sony PS3s, which is why George Hotz and others are in court being sued by Sony. And Sony has said, we will sue anyone who publishes this information. So therefore, they must sue themselves.
Yeah, so as far as republishing, if you haven't already seen this, it was in the form of a retweet.
D.C.
And what's funny about this is when I first read this.
17.
All right.
F.E.
Should I not be showing this screenshot?
Do you want to be sued? Do you want to be sued?
Tom, you remember what happened last time with HD DVD. We don't want to go down that road again, do we?
495-64-10-D4-CD.
It's interesting because a lot of folks... when you first see the tweet from the tweet account, the Kevin Butler, you go, oh my gosh, the Kevin Butler who's in marketing at Sony just accidentally retweeted PS3's code because somebody was basically baiting him because he thought it was some sort of a game. He mentioned a Battleship reference.
Well, yeah,
he didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, it does kind of sound like Battleship, right?
It's great to think that, you know, somebody was like, oh, what? Battleship? Hey, what did you do? Sink my Battleship? Right?
Wah-ha.
But then his retweet actually, now that, you know, you realize, oh, you just got owned, the whole, what, did you sink my Battleship? Totally works. It's great.
Well, I don't think it was intentional, though. I mean, as Tom mentioned, this is not Kevin Butler isn't a guy working at Sony. This is actually, you know, it's something that was created for PS3 advertising campaigns.
Oh, they don't. It's not like a Major Nelson over.
I'm sure there is
a
Kevin Butler somewhere.
It's well, I guess it could be sort of Major Nelson isn't his
but
real
Major
name.
Major Nelson wasn't fictional. That's a real person.
But and I'm sure that the person running this account is paid by Sony.
Persons. Well, the character was created. The character Kevin Butler was created by Deutsch LA, which is an advertising agency that apparently also manages Kevin Butler's Twitter account.
Uh-huh.
So when you put this into perspective, it sounds like somebody at the agency, or how many people at that agency have access to this account? Maybe an intern does. Maybe somebody who doesn't quite know what codes look like online. It just sounds like a really big oops.
Whichever way you look at it, Sony sunk their own battleship.
Yes.
Here.
Beautiful.
Good job, Sony.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank MailRoute for bringing you tech news today. If you haven't heard us talk about it before, you haven't been listening much. MailRoute provides a way to get rid of spam. Is that not enough for you to just go to MailRoute.info right now and learn about it? Okay, fine. For a few of you who are like, no, Tom, that's not enough. Can you edit an MX record? Can you find someone who can edit an MX record for you? Because that's really all you got to do to live spam-free. Darren can do it. He'll come over to your house. He'll edit your MX record all night long. Well, it actually doesn't take very long. So, the rest of the time, he's just going to be, like, eating your food from your refrigerator. But you won't get spam. That's the key. Or viruses. And Twit listeners actually get a discount, 10% off the lifetime of your account. If you're a small business, it's $2 per user per month. Or it's $30 per user per year if you're a single user. So check it out, and we thank them for their support.
Hey, Sarah, would you like a death hug?
No.
Huh?
If you hug me to death, then I can't make phone calls anymore.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
And anybody with a Verizon iPhone here able to reproduce the hug of death?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. iLounge had an investigative video, an article that they put up claiming, hey, the antenna gate issues persist. Look, we've got proof.
And look, there's no iPhone news. Let's generate some.
Yeah, PC Mag kind of took that information and said, we really can't recreate these issues unless we hold the phone. For those who are watching the show, I mean, who holds the phone where their hand is obstructing the phone itself? I mean, you really have to hold the phone in an uncomfortable way for everybody in order to maybe get those bars to go down. I happen to have, so it's kind of like, all right, well, who's right here? I happen to have firsthand experience with Verizon iPhone. I've had one in my house for the last couple of weeks because somebody in my house has a review model. But anyway, yeah. And I'll say, I mean, at least from my experience, I've had AT&T issues in half of the house because part of the house is a downstairs area. Can't make phone calls. Phone won't ring. Verizon version, perfectly fine. And I can't use my death grip to make the bars disappear. Where I could do that with AT&T if I tried hard enough. So from my experience in my home, I think that this sounds like a lot of hype because somebody wants AntennaGate
What Apple said in defense of AntennaGate was every phone has this issue. And what people said back to them was, sure, that's true, but the iPhone 4 has it worse. And so I think what we're seeing here is they've actually fixed it with the Verizon iPhone. But because every phone does have this issue, you can make it do that. Are you going to death grip your Evo now?
My Evo has a similar problem. I can't make phone calls if I sit on it.
Yeah, I can't hear people
really
at all.
I know.
It's a pain in the ass.
Literally.
Lulz.
All right. Nintendo's president, Reggie Fils-Aime, indicates the company is worried about the effect of inexpensive mobile games on the industry.
Oh, no.
Angry Birds is priced too high, he says, but it's also priced too low. He actually did say both of those things in his talk. First of all, it's priced too low because people think gaming content should only cost $2, and that's what Angry Birds costs. He's like, it's ruining the marketplace.
And it's priced too high because the quality isn't up to par.
Yeah, he also said he thinks some of those games are actually overpriced at $1 or $2. So,
well, I tend to agree with him. There are some pretty crappy games out there, but this is like some, you know, high fashion designer in Paris saying, cheap clothes are too cheap.
Yeah.
And they don't look good.
Exactly.
I mean, it's you get what you pay for.
And the Wii is one of the cheaper, is the cheapest console.
Yeah.
This happens with every industry. It's not like people are going to stop watching Lost because you can watch Tiki Bar for free.
No.
Right.
I think
as good as Tiki Bar is.
Yeah.
I think gamers are smart enough to know the difference between, you know, Angry Birds, which is wildly popular. Angry Birds isn't even really a good example because it's so popular, but a popular iPad game.
And those, a lot of times the good games on iPhone are $10.
Yeah.
And I think that may be where he's really concerned, because when you compare it to the 3DS, the amount that you're going to pay for a 3DS game is quite above $10.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, people are going to look at that and go, handheld game that doesn't make calls, smartphone, makes calls and does all kinds of things like surf the web and everything, only $10 for the games here that are from EA. Why am I paying? Am I paying that? I don't think the problem is Angry Birds. The problem is the games from the bigger development houses for the phones.
Yeah, it's like you kind of have to stop crying that games are too cheap, and then maybe look at your bottom line and see if you can lower the price for games.
It's kind of beautiful, though, because we have this problem because we've created these platforms that are open enough where indie developers, you know, one or two guys in an apartment or whatever, can come up with some amazing games. I mean, look at the World of Goo guys. I mean, that's an amazing game, and it's selling like wildfire on the iPad and like on so many other platforms because, you know, that's the democratization of not just media now. It's everywhere.
They did announce the games coming to the 3DS today. Tell me if any of these float your boat. Pilot Wings Resort.
Finally.
Nintendogs. Super Street Fighter 4?
Yes. Ooh, this one, you can do combos by touching the touch screen. So if you don't have any good like ability to hit like left, left, right, A, A, B, up, left, right,
The Sims,
like you could just tap it.
The Sims 3?
All right. No.
Lego Star Wars 3? Clone Wars?
Yeah.
Ridge Racer? Super Monkey Ball?
Ridge Racer.
Samurai Warriors Chronicles? Asphalt, 2 Tom Clancy side titles, Rayman and PES 2011.
The neat thing, I think, is the Nintendogs and Cats has the augmented reality thing with the cameras where you could like point it at a table and then your cute little doggy or kitty would like walk around on it. So we'll see how well it actually works, but that sounds neat.
Okay, yeah. In 3D, that could be pretty cool if you're into that if they're kind of game.
Yeah.
Definitely.
My friend Jen Cutter from Open Alpha is like hugely excited about all this.
FileLocker, hotfile.com, is finding itself under assault from the MPAA. They'd usually given up going after things like RapidShare, where you upload a file and then put a link with friends. But they say Hotfile is doing some pretty nasty stuff here.
Well, so I launched Hotfile and I clicked around a little bit. And I mean, it doesn't look too different than Darren and I were trying to think of what seems like similar.
Mega upload. RapidShare.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, how is this different? If you want to upload a file or have access to anyone else's file, you have to agree to the terms of service. There's a privacy policy in there. So it's on you to say that you read it. But the MPAA is claiming that Hotfile is rewarding folks for uploading illegal content because that is inevitably the most popular content as well. Now, without being a member, because I'm not going to pay just to see if this works, I don't see any evidence of that.
Well, you pay a membership fee to get in, and what the MPAA is saying is the site compensates users for uploading popular files. And what files are going to be more popular? Illegally copied music and movie videos.
So you pay a membership fee, but you get money back if a lot of people download your stuff?
Well, maybe you pay the first month, and then if you keep uploading illegal material that's popular, you get comped credits so that you don't have to pay your bill next month.
And they also say they continue to compensate people even after giving them a DMCA takedown notice.
So that's a no-no.
I think the MPAA is probably got a chance of losing this, a pretty good chance of losing this. All Hotfile has to show is that they are abiding by the takedown notice system and that they are not inducing people to load movies. Now, the popular thing is bordering on inducement, but if they can say, look, you know, we don't choose what's popular, it's just part of our algorithm. And if somebody, you know, if we don't know that that's infringing until we find out about it, mm-hmm. from a takedown notice, then we are under no obligation. What the MPAA's wedge here is to say, you should be able to look at that popular files, and if you see a major motion picture, know that that's infringing.
Right.
Right. So that's not their job, is to police that, because this whole safe harbor thing is that you don't.
Yeah. This could be bad for safe harbor.
It just sounds like, yeah. I mean, this just really sounds like MPAA is making a lot of noise about some low-hanging fruit that they happen to catch. You know, you don't see them going after, like, you know, Easy News or Giga News or any of those Usenet services where you still have to pay a monthly fee to get on. But in the difference here is you're not compensated for, you know, uploading Lost.
All right. Finally, Bing and Google draw closer in the latest Experian HitWise numbers. From December to January, Google lost 2 percentage points, 69.67 to 67.95, so even less than 2 percentage points. I'd say that's a little less than flat. That's Google declining a tiny bit, but it's not terribly bad. On the other hand, Bing.com went from 10.6% up to 12.81%, and they're now rolling up Bing numbers into Yahoo and providing a Bing-powered search number. And if you combine Bing and Yahoo and all the sites powered by Bing, you get a 27.44 percentage points of the market share versus 25.77 in December. So it's a big gain either way for Bing, and not great news for Google. I'm not sure that it makes much difference overall, except that when you look over the past 2 years since Bing launched, it's been a steady climb from 8, now up to 12, close to 13.
Yeah, my first reaction when I looked over these numbers was, oh, this must be Facebook search. But it's really mostly, you know, it's not Bing-powered search where the numbers have increased so much. It's direct search. Although, in a CNET article about this very subject, there was a comment that I thought might have some legs. Kingsway 8605 said, hey, you know, Google provides the date of the last page update directly on the search results, whatever you're searching for. And on Bing or even Yahoo, you actually have to visit the page to find out if the article that you thought was relevant was actually written 5 years ago. So some of these search numbers might result in bad UI. You know, it's not necessarily, I don't know, it would depend on the article, but I mean, that might factor into this. I can't imagine that it would, I mean, it certainly doesn't account for all of the number increases.
But it could mean that people are going back to Bing more often,
exactly.
To be like, well, wait, that wasn't. Eh.
And just because people,
it's a fair point. I'm not sure how much of an effect it would have.
Me either. I think it might have some effect, though, especially for people who are just, you know, people who are searching are just searching. And they're, you know, if you're kind of in the moment, clicking around a little bit more, you don't realize you clicked 5 times if you would have only clicked once in Google.
All right, time now for the news fuse. That was the sound of Mark Zuckerberg's cat. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg has obtained a restraining order against his cat. No, actually against Pradeep Manokonda, who's reportedly been attempting to contact him using threatening language. Manokonda must stay 300 yards away from Zuckerberg, his sister, and his girlfriend. Mr. Manokonda has said to have shown up at several Facebook offices and Mr. Zuckerberg's home asking for money. Police issued a verbal warning to the man in late January, but he's repeatedly attempted to contact Zuckerberg through messages sent both on Facebook and by the mail. Kind of. Wish you had some privacy there, Zuck.
Can't you block somebody on Facebook?
Yeah, but it's really hard. I mean, you got to go through all these options, and Zuckerberg probably just got confused.
Well,
it's called a restraining order.
Yeah, exactly. Nokia has ended development on its first new MeeGo OS smartphone before it launched. The MeeGo platform was created last year from the merger of Nokia and Intel's Linux-based platforms, MeeMo and Moblin, and seen as the potential great smart hope against iOS and Android. But if this news brings a tear to your eye, don't fret. Wipe away those tears, because analysts said Nokia could still show the next MeeGo device, not this one, but the next one, even if it's not finished, later this week at its Investor Day on Friday or its news conference on Sunday.
Microsoft wants you to be worm-free, so they're releasing a new patch. That's a red herring. No,
it's called HeartGuard.
Yeah. No, here's the thing. There's this wonderful thing in Windows XP and most versions of Windows called Auto Run, where you can pop in a CD and it'll automatically load that driver disk or whatever so that you don't have to like go into my computer and D drive or whatever. And it's a nice, huge convenience. But if you're a malware author, you can write the same thing on autorun.inf, which will run your code. And it's being used in things like the Conficker Worm or even Stuxnet. So Microsoft fixed this in Windows 7. It pops up a little dialogue before it even runs anything. And they've got a patch. In fact, they've had this patch for a while for Windows XP. And now they're making it an optional update. So if you go...
No, it's not optional anymore.
Oh, it's not optional?
Yeah,
it's on the Express?
It used to be optional. Now it's not. Yeah.
Good. Although... Adam Shostak, a program manager with Microsoft Software, the computing section, said on Tuesday that it won't affect quote-unquote shiny media such as CDs and DVDs that have auto-run files.
Or the U3 system.
Or the U3 system, which uses the Hack 5 Switchblade technology.
Be a CD.
So check out Hack 5 Season 2, Episode 2 for how to own computers with a thumb drive there.
The 11th beta of Firefox 4 is here and includes a do not track setting. Finally, taking it a big step beyond cookie-based opt-out services for those who don't want their online behavior tracked. Browser's preferences dialog has a new checkbox now. Users can toggle to control whether the opt-out header is transmitted to servers. However, we don't know if any servers are actually listening or honoring the do not track button. But hey, it's there now.
Well, yeah. People now we know that the egg came first.
Yeah.
The FTC appointed anti-DRM advocate Ed Felton as its first chief technologist a few months ago. And now net neutrality expert Tim Wu is the FTC's senior advisor. Wu won't just be dealing with net neutrality, says Chairman John Leibowitz. He says he'll be working on issues at the nexus of consumer protection, competition, law, and technology. Wu starts the job on V-Day, February 14th. Oh, that's sweet. And he'll have to take leave from Columbia Law to do so. But... he's probably going to have to dial back on his outspokenness about net neutrality. He recently tweeted, no more policy tweets starting next week.
And he coined the phrase net neutrality, yes. As I understand it.
Nice. Now, Verizon Wireless says it will be offering improved voice quality on phone calls using its new 4G LTE network next year. Brian Higgins, executive director of Ecosystems, said that the quality would be considered high definition and that this would allow the carrier to support simultaneous voice and data services, something its GSM rival AT&T has been touting for years. Now, Verizon plans to demo the technology on the new LG Revolution Android handset next week at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona.
News that the playbook would initially be available only on Sprint got a few folks a little miffed about being locked to a single carrier. Scattertech.com has uncovered a mysterious page that previously allowed people to join an early access program for a playbook on Verizon. The marketing agency that works for both RIM and Verizon owns the site, so it's arguably legit, or maybe just a perfect world scenario mock-up type thing that somebody put together on a slow press release day. But either way, it's given Verizon playbook fans hope.
I have hope.
Help
Actually,
me.
I don't really care.
Verizon.
No, I care.
You're my only hope.
I care for all the folks who don't want to be locked to a single carrier. So let's hope it's true. Florida security expert Kelly Langford has pointed out something even more ominous than the Trenta-sized Starbucks coffee, which is pretty scary, people. Turns out that a simple screen grab from an unsupervised handset, if you've got a Starbucks account, can enable a barcode thief to gorge themselves on free coffee using your account. Because the app payment system relies on reading a barcode from the iPhone screen, which identifies the customer, and then debits money from their account. But that barcode doesn't change. So if anybody has access to your hand, like if you're in a coffee shop and you go to the bathroom and you don't password protect your iPhone and you leave the barcode up, and a thief is sitting next to you and takes a screen bag and emails it to himself, then you can have all your coffee.
It can take 20 seconds or less to steal that. And then they can just, it's like they stole a copy of your Starbucks gift card. They can just keep using it.
I just love how they just have to buy Starbucks things.
Prediction. Next number one app store app is going to be a barcode brute forcer. Just generates lots of barcodes that happen to be compatible with
that may work
Starbucks.
But you still have to just drink a lot of coffee and bad sandwiches, so
that's true too. Finally, NBC will find out whether Twitter can save its local news ratings. The local media unit, which owns and operates 10 stations around the country for NBC, is integrating Twitter into its programming with a segment called The 20, which starts this week on NBC's Washington, D.C. and New York stations. They essentially stand up there and read things off Twitter, and then have two people on Skype to tell them what they think about the things they're reading on Twitter.
Right. And they give the other people on Skype about 20 words to speak their mind.
Yeah, it goes really fast. It feels like 20 seconds. The example, at least that we're watching for the video folks, is about, what do you guys think about Christina Aguilera flubbing that national anthem at the
Super
hitting.
Bowl?
Yeah.
And they both say, I didn't think it was very good.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great example, in my opinion.
That's about how long that they had,
well,
too.
On one hand, I think it's cool for local news to at least try to use some modern tools to not seem so, I don't know, out of date. But they're treating it very, like, game show-ish.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, the key to making something like this work is for your guests to have an insight that you wouldn't have thought of and you wouldn't have got anywhere else. And I didn't see that in this example.
No, and I think it's also to be accessible. Like, anybody on the show could be one of you.
Yeah.
We're all the same folks.
I think it has a lot of potential, but we're also talking about...
We're also talking about local news.
Yeah.
And they're grasping to be relevant. At least in many cases. No offense to anybody who works in local news. You're all wonderful people.
In fact, we work with people who work in local news.
That's right.
Jeff.
I used to work in local news.
Yeah.
So.
On to the calendar. Let's blaze through it.
Microsoft sent its first service pack for Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 to OEMs. And the update goes live for consumers on February 22nd through Windows Update. Flash Player 10.2 is out and allows full-screen video on two screens simultaneously. Has anybody tried this? I haven't. Sounds cool, though. The Verizon iPhone is now available to order or reserve for in-store pickup. And I have a kind of a sad story about this because some people may not know that Tom and I will be covering the iPhone Verizon event that starts at 7 a.m. Pacific
tomorrow
morning.
So we'll be up at 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, I'll be up earlier than that.
I'll be up before that, but we'll be going streaming live at like 6:30, 6:45.
Yeah.
Pacific time.
I vowed to go down to the flagship Apple store in San Francisco and go live and get me an iPhone. But here's the problem is that if you order like a civilized person the day before, I can't actually wait in line or go pick up my reserved phone until noon. So I'm not actually going to be able to get a phone, even though I'm being organized about it. I would have to stand in the line with everybody who didn't even attempt to pre-order the phone tomorrow. So I'll do that, but I don't know if I'm going to get one in time. Well, we're only going to be live for about an hour.
Don't go home tonight. Just, you know, grab your camping bag.
Stop by REI on your way
to the Apple store.
It's not even sort of funny.
AT&T's got an answer to the Verizon iPhone. They're rolling out unlimited calling to any mobile number starting February 10th.
Oh, you're killing me, AT&T.
Unlimited calling to any number. Any mobile number.
Good joke. Again, insulting on the part of AT&T. All those phone calls you can't make, well... You can make unlimited amounts of them.
Yeah, we're not going to try and stop you.
Just in time for our network to be a little bit more freed up. Whatever. On Friday the 11th, Nokia Capital Markets, where Stephen Elop, who's the CEO, is expected to announce a contract with, I don't know, an alien race?
Yes.
We don't know.
Rumors
we don't
are getting
know
silly
what he's
about what's going
to announce. I mean, a lot of stuff's going on behind the scenes at Nokia right now. It's like, what will Stephen Elop do? Is he going to move Nokia to the Silicon Valley?
All right. And finally, for you UK listeners, YouView has confirmed that its set-top box will not ship until early 2012. YouTube combines the Freeview service in the UK with a digital receiver so you can get internet video. It's kind of like a Google TV for Freeview. But it will not be coming until 2012. It's been delayed again. Sorry.
So is it maybe never going to come? Because we're all going to be dead before then? Never.
No, it's totally going to come.
Okay.
Never going to come. On to the emails. TNT@twit.tv. We got an anonymous email from someone in an accounting department at a web hosting company who says, we get DMCA takedowns all the time, and I usually don't see many of them or pay much attention. I did see a subpoena on behalf of Sony. So apparently jailbreak.zip was hosted at least for a while on our web host server. They are asking for every IP of every person who downloaded the file or accessed anything else at the site. I don't remember the name of the site offhand. Now we just have a paralegal on our staff and we most likely won't fight anything. However, unless the customer set it up so we don't keep the server logs more than like a week or something, we may not even have anything to send. But I can't believe Sony is just being ridiculously aggressive with this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, you ask for everything and you get what you can get. And in this case, well, let's see what Dev Null has. Oh, Dev Null has nothing.
What does it matter whether people visited the site that happened to have the infringing code on it?
It's kind of sad, too. It's like, here at Bluehost, we just have one lonely paralegal trying to push some paper, so we probably won't fight anything. Just can't. We're just little guys.
Well, and that happens a lot.
It's not the ISP's, you know, responsibility to. It's the customers.
46.
Yeah.
DC, EA, D3. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching Tech News Today. Don't forget to find Darren Kitchen on Hack 5 as well.
We're hacking it up. Yeah, we got more great coverage from ShmooCon. We've got the coming Season 9, which we'll have all sorts of details about in weeks to come.
Twit.tv/TNT is our website address. You can send us an email, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Keep it around 30 seconds and make it concise and compelling, and we'll play it on the air. But we'll listen to all of them. 260-TNT-SHOW. That's the number. We will see you tomorrow. 46 DC EA D3 17 FE.